Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Breaking the Rules of OCD. Find lasting freedom from the unwanted thoughts, rituals, and compulsions that rule your life. By Kim Rockwell Evans, PhD. Narrated by Natasha Sodek. Foreword. It might come as a surprise that I'm not really a fan of self-help books, but please buy all of mine. I'm probably not supposed to say that. We'll see if it makes it past the editors, but it's true. Using a self-help book can be a risky endeavor. Therapists shouldn't give clinical advice to people they've never met. No matter how many disclaimers we put in our books, we're still hoping you'll do what we recommend, but we'll never know because it's a one-way relationship. A therapist may or may not be a good fit for your needs, but you can interview them, go back and forth with them, and let them earn, or fail to earn, your trust. A self-help book can't hear you and can't ask you clarifying questions. It can only speak to you, and that's going to be hit or miss. In this particular self-help book, Kim Rockwell Evans credibly sounds like a therapist who's spent a good long while getting to know you, and the odds are in your favor that if you have OCD, this book will speak to you. Breaking the Rules of OCD lets you find yourself in the material and asks you to carefully examine how OCD affects your life. Rather than breaking down this often painful and impairing condition into subtypes, this book presents OCD as one condition with a series of mental rules. Once these OCD rules are understood, they can be broken, and once they are broken, you can be free to move about your life. The book starts with absolutely crystal clear instructions on how to make the sections ahead work for you. Importantly, the premise of the book is that rules are adaptive. Your compulsions are not your fault. It makes good sense why you would do what you feel you need to do to avoid the pain of OCD. It is in our nature to avoid pain, but it is also in our nature to fight, to be defiant, to reject that which constrains us. The challenge in overcoming OCD is in making it a fair fight. If we can do a functional analysis of how the OCD convinces us to stay stuck, that is, if we can see the machinery behind the OCD, we stand a much better chance. Yes, once again, you are going to be asked to consider doing something that sounds impossible. Exposure and response prevention, ERP, requires going up against OCD while resisting the very behaviors you thought were protecting you. One of the biggest challenges in mastering OCD has always been turning exposure into something you want to do. Why would you want to do something that makes you uncomfortable, anxious, or afraid? Rockwell Evans uses the metaphor of Aikido to explain that your opponent can be welcomed as a teacher, that taking the energy coming at you and turning it into energy that works for you is wise and effective. She also recommends acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT, mindfulness, and self-compassion tools to help you pivot and bend where curiosity and kindness make the best offense. The book describes the many ways in which the disorder dissuades one from freedom. Rules like, you must always be certain, all thoughts are important, and you must always control your internal experiences, represent the arguments OCD uses to trick you into thinking you have no say in the matter. This quite brilliantly sidesteps the issue of, what about my specific obsession? That plagues most books about OCD. She covers all of it because all of it applies to these unfair rules. Importantly, Rockwell Evans does more than just lay out these rules and tell you how to break them. In each chapter, she explains how the rules affect your life, your life. In the book's final chapters, strategies for designing your personalized treatment plan, signs of progress to seek out, and traps to avoid are all presented masterfully. The exercises are practical and designed to apply specifically to you as you work through the book, not just as examples of good ideas to try in therapy. I've never been a very good rule follower, sorry to say. Ask any of my ex-bosses. I don't like being told what to do, even by my own mind. I appreciate direction and guidelines, sure, and I'll even take advice from time to time, but rules make me itchy. This book may make you realize many rules you didn't even know you were following, and I hope it inspires you to stand tall and rebel. John Hirschfield, MFT, Director, Center for OCD and Anxiety at Shepherd Pratt. Introduction. Is obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, ruling your life? If so, you're not alone, and there is hope for you to break free from the paralyzing grip OCD has on you by learning to break the rules of OCD. You can live a fulfilling life. Who this book is for. This book is written primarily for people who have been diagnosed with OCD. That said, the treatment for OCD is often counterintuitive, so it is important for loved ones to understand what it is like to have OCD and know how it is treated. This book is for them, too. Finally, busy mental health professionals may find this book helpful in understanding how to apply the treatment for their clients. About this book. This book is a guide to help you live a fulfilling life with OCD. The techniques outlined here integrate exposure and response prevention, ERP, acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT, and mindfulness and compassion-focused therapies, all proven effective based on clinical research. You'll find a wealth of information, case examples, and activities to help you apply these techniques in your life and break the OCD rules that have been interfering with your quality of life. How to use this book. The book is structured for you to listen to from beginning to end, working through each exercise as you go. Once you've worked through it in order, you may find it useful to listen to and practice the exercises from more challenging individual chapters again. Although this is a self-help book that you can work through by yourself, you may find it helpful to have the support of a therapist. As you listen, keep a journal and pen handy so you can work on the exercises that I guide you through. To assist with this, this book includes a number of free tools and worksheets that you can download and print at newharbinger.com/51024. Everything you need is contained in the text of the book. These online tools are supplementary, but do check them out, as the forms and prompts in particular are likely to be useful in addition to your blank journal. You will benefit most from listening to this book if you plan to follow this approach. Devote time each day to listening to and practicing the exercises. Complete the suggested exercises. They're all designed to help you understand how the material applies to you. Practice the exercises deliberately and consistently. You have been in a behavioral pattern that keeps you stuck. The skills presented in this book are not magic. Repeated practice will help you integrate them into your life. Some of the exercises are designed to be challenging. Learning new patterns of behavior is uncomfortable, so expect to venture outside of your comfort zone. I promise you, it will be worth your while. Approach all exercises with curiosity and an open mind. If you've tried therapy for your OCD before and found it demanding, just notice your internal responses and continue working. Be patient and kind with yourself. Having OCD is hard, And working on new skills to break the rules of your OCD is challenging and triggering. You may get discouraged at times while you are practicing new skills. Your success may feel up and down. This is normal. Try to not let this discourage you. When you feel a need for support, seek it out. Support and community can offer you strength, hope, and encouragement. Pace yourself. If you try to work through this book too quickly, you may feel overwhelmed. Conversely, if you avoid the work and don't keep up a listening rhythm, you may be engaging in avoidant behavior. That said, it is also okay to take a break from the material if you need it. Author's note. I am a psychotherapist in Dallas, Texas, who specializes in treating OCD and anxiety disorders. For over 20 years, I've had the privilege of working with wonderful clients who suffer from OCD and anxiety. When I describe particular examples of people who have OCD in this book, know that these are fictionalized composites of many people. This book is not meant to be a replacement for consultation and psychotherapy with a mental health professional. If you have difficulty working through this book, seek out professional help. The International OCD Foundation website, iocdf.org, is an excellent resource to find a community that understands and can assist you in finding the right help. Chapter 1. The Many Faces of OCD. Fran is standing in a puddle of water from her overflowing toilet. Again, she's used too much toilet paper in her mission to feel clean enough. She and her 10-year-old daughter Jen are due at a family reunion in a few hours. Although Fran's family is well educated about OCD, they have expressed frustration with her history of arriving late to family gatherings or missing them altogether. So Fran is especially anxious to get there on time. Jen, with her mother stuck in the bathroom, knows what's about to happen. Fran will ask her to gather towels and lay them on the floor to form a path to the guest bathroom. After Fran carefully walks on the towels, she will ask Jen for reassurance that she has not touched the floor with her feet. While Fran showers for the second time, Jen will need to throw the towels in the trash bin outside and disinfect the floor. Only when all of this is done and Fran feels clean again can they leave. They both cry on the way to the party and arrive when it is almost over. If you have OCD yourself, you may recognize your own variation of the rules it imposes on your life. If you are listening to this book to understand someone you know, this is what it feels like to have OCD. OCD is exhausting and a lot of work. It affects all aspects of life and hits us where it hurts the most. Many times, our attempts to deal with OCD only make it stronger or just cause new problems. Take heart. There are treatments that work. You can live a meaningful life doing what you love while at the same time living with OCD. Breaking free from OCD mainly comes down to understanding that much of what gives OCD power are the rigid, stifling rules it demands you follow, like the rule that you must be absolutely certain. Fran had a choice the day of the party, to either perform her compulsions so that she could be certain she felt clean enough, or take the risk of resisting those compulsions and being uncertain. Understandably, she chose the road to certainty so she could feel comfortable at the party without worrying about feeling she was unclean and therefore disgusting. For the OCD sufferer, the road to certainty appears to be straightforward and offers some peace of mind. But like all attempts to get certainty, it never works. As Fran stands in her bathroom, her feet in toilet water, her mind races. Will I ever be clean enough? Will I accidentally contaminate my floor outside the bathroom? Did my body get contaminated by particles when I flushed the toilet? Will my day be ruined because I'm miserable obsessing about this? It's clear that what looked like a solution to give in to her imperative urge to make sure she's clean enough, was actually not a solution. Fran and Jen arrived late to the party, upset, and she experienced terrible anxiety about being unclean anyway. All that worry and cleaning for nothing. Often, as you travel through the twists and turns of your compulsions, you discover that you are right back where you started, unsettled about uncertainty. Your tricky mind has put you in a position of feeling distressed and stuck. However, if you can understand how OCD works, the rules that keep you stuck in a pattern of obsession and compulsion, you can find your way out. Understanding obsessions and compulsions. At the center of OCD are obsessions, unwanted thoughts, images, or impulses that repeatedly occur, that feel out of control, and that create a lot of distress and anxiety. When obsessions arise, a person with OCD will engage in compulsions in an effort to find some relief. Compulsions are urges to perform behaviors that follow a rigid set of rules in an attempt to avoid the outcomes you obsess over. They can be observable, external behaviors, such as checking stove burners, window locks, or doorknobs, or repeating certain actions, such as washing your hands over and over again. Or they may be more covert, mental rituals, such as praying in a certain way, or having to undo thoughts to erase the distressing ones. Compulsions are upsetting and time-consuming, and they often interfere with normal daily activities. You likely recognize that your obsessions and compulsions are excessive and unreasonable, but you still struggle with the need to perform these actions in order to lessen your anxiety. The alternative, not trying to resolve the anxiety you feel, may seem 1,000 times worse. Let's take some time to learn about the different obsessions and compulsions that can manifest so you can begin to understand the precise contours of your own OCD. Typical obsessions and OCD subtypes. While the key feature of OCD is the presence of obsessions and compulsions that are distressing enough to be disruptive to your daily activities, the particular content of obsessions and the particular compulsions that manifest can vary widely. What follows are examples of many of the common subtypes of OCD, along with the kinds of questions you might be asking yourself if you have those particular symptoms. As you listen, consider whether any of the descriptions are especially resonant with your own experience. Intrusive thoughts. Intrusive thoughts related to OCD involve imagining deliberate violent acts toward yourself or others. Some sufferers have violent images and urges to cause harm. Others have impulses to curse or to blurt out racial slurs. "Am I an animal killer?" Michael said. "I love my dog so much. He's my baby, and I don't want anything to happen to him. Sometimes when he looks at me with such a sweet look in his eye, I get the urge to grab a knife and stab him right in the eye. I can't get rid of the terrible picture of that in my mind. I hope this isn't a sign that I'm violent. Now I have to keep my distance from him and look away." "Am I suicidal?" Kathy said. "I get a lot of dark thoughts sometimes. I've been thinking a lot about killing myself. I don't really want to, but I don't understand this urge I have to stab myself. I'm so scared I'm really going to do it. I no longer have sharp objects in my home." "She's scared she's a killer, but I know she's not," Don said. "My wife has confessed her intrusive thoughts to me every waking moment. She will say things like, 'I just thought about throwing this glass of water in your face. I thought about stabbing someone with my keys while shopping. I thought about kicking the neighbor while I was getting the mail.' She asks me to reassure her that she isn't a killer hundreds of times a day. I'm exhausted." "Am I like those women on the TV news who kill their children?" Dorothy said. I was so excited to find out I was pregnant. I kept thinking about how wonderful motherhood would be. I love children, and I love my baby so much. But sometimes, when I hold her, I think about snapping her neck. If I'm in the kitchen, I think about stabbing her. If I'm taking her on a walk, I think about pushing the stroller into traffic. I don't want to hurt her. If I'm psychotic and I don't know it, I should kill myself to save my baby. I will take myself out if I'm a risk to my beautiful little girl. Am I a racist and in denial? Alberto said. As I go about my day at work, obscenities and racial slurs come into my mind when I see certain people. I really like my coworkers and my job. I don't mean these horrible thoughts that come into my mind. I worry about it later as I reflect on my day. Contamination. Contamination-related fears are a common form of OCD. These fears can be about germs, bodily fluids, toxic material, sticky substances, or general disgust. If I can't wash to keep clean, I am very uncomfortable, Dave said. People at work keep asking me why I wash my hands for such a long time. My washing compulsions are so exhausting. My shower in the morning takes an hour. I wash my hair 2 times and then tell myself I washed it. Then I go through each body part, leaving my genitals and anal opening last. I wash each body part with 2 pumps of soap and then state I washed it until I've completely washed. If I accidentally touch my body after washing my private parts, I have to start over. I don't eat or drink once I get to work because it takes too long in the bathroom. When I get home, I have to strip at the door and leave my phone, computer, and keys at my cleaning station. I clean everything I need for the evening and run to the shower. I don't like feeling dirty. Danger and harm. These obsessions involve fears of accidentally causing harm. Examples include causing a vehicle accident, accidentally poisoning others, and careless behavior causing harm. Hit-and-run obsessions are often triggered by hitting a bump in the road or seeing something on the side of the road while driving. As a compulsion, people go back and check to see if they have hit anything. These doubts can compel a person to check the news, call the police, and search the internet to determine whether they committed a hit-and-run. Am I responsible for a hit-and-run? Aaron said. Every time I drive, I think I've hit a pedestrian or someone's pet. All it takes is feeling a little bump in the road, seeing something in the road or a pedestrian on the side of the road. I start thinking about whether I ran someone over, and I review every moment that I can remember. I wonder whether I'm remembering right. I often have to drive back and check. Even that doesn't stop these thoughts. I watch the news, and I check my phone for alerts from the news to see if there has been a hit and run. I've resorted to calling the police to see if there were any hit and runs. I can't get it out of my mind. Should I stop driving? Superstitions. Bad luck, words, colors, and numbers take on a magical meaning with superstitious obsessions. People hold a belief that what they associate with bad luck can influence future events in an unfavorable or harmful way. The number 6 is bad luck, Dana said. I fear something bad will happen if I do anything important on a date that relates to the number 6. The 6th, 12th, 18th, 24th, 26th, and 30th are all bad luck days where something catastrophic could happen. I also can't do anything important if the clock hits anything related to a 6. I have my way of making sure I don't order something or contact someone or have any other transaction related to the number 6, or something will be tainted or someone might die. It is really hard to keep this secret, and I avoid everything I need to so I can go on with my day. Seeing the number 6 could cause harm to someone I care about, and it would be my fault. Scrupulosity. Religious scrupulosity obsessions are characterized by blasphemous thoughts, fear of committing sins or offending God, and doubts of salvation are followed by prayer rituals, reassurance seeking, and confession compulsions. Moral scrupulosity refers to obsessions about morality and the difference between right and wrong. "Is God mad and sending me to hell?" Peter said. "I went to the most beautiful mass on Sunday morning and had an intrusive thought. Fuck Jesus. How jarring. I've sinned again because of these intrusive thoughts. To fix this, I pray to God for forgiveness, and I need to confess in a certain way. I hope God isn't mad at me and won't send me to hell. It is embarrassing to repeatedly ask the priest if I'm going to hell for thinking this. I hope I don't really mean it, and that God knows I wasn't serious about it." "Did I cheat?" Alma said. "I heard a loud noise while taking an exam and turned my head to see what was going on. Did I see someone else's test and cheat? Am I a bad person? Should I tell the professor? Morality is important to me, and no matter how much I review every step of my memory, I can't figure it out." Sexuality. Sexual obsessions cover a broad range of fears about sexual acts that are taboo. This includes fear of being a pedophile or rapist, or of being sexually attracted to family members or animals. "I think it moved," John said. "My 18-month-old nephew climbed onto my lap and hit my groin. Oh my God, I think my penis just swelled. Maybe I'm attracted to my nephew and I'm a pedophile. Now I make excuses to not hold him for fear I really want to molest him. Whenever I see him or any other child, I double-check my groin to see if I'm getting aroused." Sexual orientation. Questions about sexual orientation create uncertainty and confusion about sexual preference. "Am I gay?" Betty said. "I thought my friend's blouse was so adorable on her. Maybe this means I'm gay. I have a happy marriage, and we are trying to get pregnant. My life is ruined if I'm really gay. I don't want to hurt my husband and family. Every time I see an attractive woman, I think I'm gay. Every time I have sex and I don't have an orgasm, I'm sure I'm gay. I'm so confused and can't convince myself one way or the other. Does that mean I'm bi? Even though I've read every article that I can, nothing convinces me one way or the other." Just right, incompleteness, and symmetry. Obsessions of this subtype center around feelings and sensations that don't feel quite right. People who struggle with this are uncomfortable until they have the just right feeling. Sometimes feeling that something is incomplete may relate to not feeling right. Needing to have symmetry and exactness may drive the desire to have a just right feeling. "I need to feel just right," Lily said. "It doesn't feel right if I don't sit or get up out of a chair in a certain way. It's hard to explain this feeling other than to say that I know when I don't feel right. It is embarrassing when people ask me what is wrong when I am repeatedly getting up or moving around in a chair." "I need things to be exactly equal and even," Bella said. "I can tell if someone has moved things around. I can't leave things out of place. I've everything arranged just like I want it. Everything needs to be exactly equal and even. I don't feel right if things don't look right. Sometimes people joke with me by moving things around slightly. It is very upsetting." Emotional contamination. Obsessions about being tainted by an unwanted quality of people or places are referred to as emotional contamination. A person or place becomes associated with an unwanted characteristic that may contaminate a person struggling with this type of OCD. "Wyoming equals danger to me and my family," Ben said. My cousin's brother-in-law, who lived in Wyoming, was seriously injured in an accident there. I'm afraid that anyone who has been to Wyoming will taint my family and me with tragic events. I just found out my neighbors had friends visiting.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?